You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back. Next up, we've got Eurovision.
Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95BFM with our European correspondent, Cameron Mulgan.
Kia ora, Cameron. Let's begin this week by talking about the situation in Ukraine. Can you give me a quick update?
Almost 300,000 refugees have left Ukraine in the past week, according to the UNHCR. This brings the total amount of refugees who have fled to be 5.9 million. The UN, the head of the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission today had said that the civilian death toll is thousands higher than its current confirmed total of over 3,000 and is working to corroborate every single incident. In Mariupol, more civilians were able to leave the Azovstal steel plant thanks to a UN Red Cross brokered evacuation. There's now ongoing fighting between the remaining Ukrainian forces trapped there and the surrounding Russian forces. Kiev is starting to breathe again, with the US doing preparatory work on opening its embassy, and Canadian PM Justin Trudeau visiting over the weekend to reopen the Canadian embassy. German Foreign Minister Baerbock visited Kiev today and also announced they'd reopen the German embassy. The highest visit from a German official so far, although still nothing yet from Chancellor Scholz. The President of the European Council, Charles Michel, visited Odessa yesterday and was forced to go underground due to a Russian missile attack over the city. Odessa has had two separate missile strikes this past week, including a shopping mall being hit yesterday. Dozens of feared dead after a school in eastern Ukraine was bombed on Saturday. In Kharkiv, Ukrainian forces are continuing to counterattack Russian forces to push them out of the surrounding area. And in the eastern front of Donbass, there have been no major Russian gains, although they have taken the small town of Popasna.
And can you tell me about Putin's Victory Day speech? What are we reading from that?
Yeah, well, it's more noticeable for what wasn't said. So there was a lot of speculation that Putin could either formally declare war on Ukraine instead of it being a special military operation. He might have announced conscription or claimed victory in Mariupol, nor did he outline any conditions of victory. So fortunately, none of the escalation that the West was worried about has occurred. Instead, he blamed the conflict on NATO and falsely declared Kiev was after nuclear weapons. It was quite a surreal performance, talking about defeating fascism while waging an invasion on your neighbor. In contrast, Zelensky released a slick propaganda video where he walked through a Kiev street through tank barriers and spoke of how after Ukraine wins the war, there'll be two victory days.
Last week, we touched briefly on the EU oil embargo. Could you tell me a little bit more about that this week? How is that affecting countries in the EU and how will the embargo actually work?
As a way to stop funding Russia fight the war, the EU is proposing a gradual ban on Russian oil and refined fuels to be implemented by the end of this year. So as we previously discussed, the EU is the largest importer of Russian oil, and according to the Centre for Research on Energy and Clean Air, have paid over 40 billion euro to Russia for its fossil fuels since the war began. The amount of money and resources has made this current round of sanctions quite trickier. Greece, Malta and Cyprus, who have a large shipping fleet that transports Russian oil, have expressed concerns. Germany, which was initially hesitant, now supports the ban. The EU are trying to be quite flexible with the largest consumers of Russian oil. The Czech Republic will be allowed to keep the pipes flowing until June 2024. And Slovakia and Hungary, which are nearly 100% reliant on Russian oil, can keep them going until the end of 2024. As expected, Hungary's Viktor Orban has said he's against the ban, saying it would be like dropping a nuclear bomb on Hungary's economy. This resulted with EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen visiting Budapest yesterday for more negotiations. So there's been nothing concrete yet, although it's expected that an agreement could be made by the end of this week.
Let's move now to Northern Ireland and speak a little bit about the political landscape there, because I believe there's just been an election. Can you tell me about the results of that election and what those mean for Northern Ireland?
Yeah, it was a happy day for Sinn Féin, who are now Northern Ireland's largest party, which is the first time for a nationalist party. Sinn Féin also are the party which received the most votes in the Republic of Ireland's 2020 elections. So there's even talk of a border poll on Irish unification at some point, but that is a very, very long way off. The former largest party, the Unionist DUP, has lost three seats, with the smaller centrist Alliance Party picking up nine seats. So in Northern Ireland, following the Good Friday Agreement, it's a devolved government and the executive is shared between the two largest parties, which are usually nationalist and unionist. However, no executive has yet been formed due to DUP concerns over the Northern Ireland Protocol and a blocking attempts to form a power-sharing executive. So what is the Northern Ireland Protocol? So because the Republic of Ireland is an EU member and there's a strong desire to not have any border controls on the island, the UK and the EU needed a way to enforce a customs border following Brexit. So there is now a customs border between Northern Ireland and the UK. So this means goods like food would be checked that they're in line with EU standards on mainland Britain before being sent to Northern Ireland. This means, in essence, that there's now an Irish sea border for goods between the UK, and which the Unionist DUP are very unhappy about. This came into effect at the start of 2021 and has caused some flare-ups of violence, as well as a worrying communique from loyalist paramilitary groups. It's become a bit of a political football. So the DUP are blaming Westminster for selling them out. Westminster are blaming the EU for being inflexible, and the EU are responding saying they're being as flexible as they can and for the UK to be honest with its constituents. And it really shows more of a bungling for those involved with Brexit. The UK could have agreed to EU standards, which probably would have made this go away. The DUP back in 2017 helped form a government with Theresa May, which allowed her to negotiate a slightly different Brexit deal with the EU. This is kind of why they lost the seats in the election and pretty much shot themselves in the foot. And UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss is hinting that they could scrap parts of the protocol and break their treaty agreements with the EU.
What happens while the DUP are blocking an executive from forming?
So while this is going on, the Northern Ireland Assembly Stormont is in caretaker mode with no major policies being made. This could last up to 6 months until potentially a new election, although it was previously suspended for 3 years in 2017 following another disagreement between Sinn Féin and the DUP. So what this means is that the average person in Northern Ireland is missing out on their government working for them. You know, there's a rising cost of living crisis in Northern Ireland along with the UK, so I'm not sure if any new policies will be enacted. Abortion services are reported to be non-existent after being legalised in 2019. The Northern Ireland Human Rights Commission last week stated that women are still faced with deplorable options when it comes to abortion services.
Let's continue down the election watch route. And can we talk about Frontex, which is the EU's border patrol? The Swiss are currently voting about funding for Frontex. For listeners who aren't aware, can you explain what Frontex does?
Yeah, sorry for trying to make this the election watch. There's just a lot of things happening. So, Switzerland usually hold quite a lot of referendums, but I thought this one was worth looking at. So on Sunday, there's a referendum to increase the Swiss contribution to Frontex. It's quite small in the big scheme of things, tripling funding to 60 million Swiss francs by 2027 and increasing its contribution of staff from 6 to 40 people. So Frontex are the EU's border patrol force. And since the 2015-2016 migrant crisis, it's seen its funding and mandate significantly grow from 150 million euro in 2015 to almost 750 million in 2022. This is because normally inside the Schengen area within the EU, there are no border controls. So the theory was to have a stronger external border to keep the integrity of the internal Schengen area. It doesn't borrow equipment or personnel from EU countries, but instead recruits and buys equipment directly. And it's now become potentially the EU's most militarized force. However, there have been significant criticisms regarding human rights concerns and corruption at Frontex. So in late 2020, Frontex headquarters were raided by the EU anti-fraud office OLAF over illegal pushbacks and corruption. In 2021, Der Spiegel reported of illegal pushbacks of refugee boats back to Libya in cooperation with the Libyan Coast Guard. This was illegal under EU law due to significant human rights concerns regarding torture and imprisonment in Libya. And just a couple of weeks ago, there was another report by Der Spiegel and other outlets about illegal pushbacks in Greek waters. Due to this OLAF investigation and all of the media attention, Frontex chief since 2015, Fabrice Leggeri, resigned at the end of April.
And what would happen if funding is not increased?
Well, in a way, it's a vote on if Switzerland should stay in the Schengen area or not. There's debate that if Switzerland don't contribute to Frontex, this could mean a withdrawal out of this free movement area. However, it kind of seems academic at this point. Polling by Swiss national broadcaster SRG last week put support at around 69%. But I thought, it was quite interesting to look at, especially in light of the Ukrainian refugees. So NGOs like Sea-Watch, which have their own boats in the Mediterranean, are still doing rescues of hundreds of migrants, and that will probably increase this summer. And also, I was looking up, Switzerland have taken in approximately 40,000 refugees.
And finally, let's talk tech in the EU, which we've touched on before, but let's talk about the Digital Services Act. The EU recently signed on regulation that allows authorities to impose a state of emergency on social media sites, search engines, and online marketplaces. Can you explain a little more about that and who it affects?
Yeah, more tech regulation from the EU. So you might remember we spoke about the Digital Markets Act back in March, aimed at regulating tech markets. Now the Digital Services Act aims to, quote, create a safer digital space where the fundamental rights of users are protected. So the DSA is focused on regulating content, trying to combat misinformation, and try to keep a rein on the dark arts of algorithms, which seem to rule us all. It will force tech platforms to be more transparent about how its algorithms work. It will remove content defined as illegal. It will ban dark patterns, which are those flows to guide consumers to certain products or services. And it will also restrict advertising based on sensitive personal information like gender, race, or religion, as well as not having targeted ads for children. If tech platforms break this, fines could be up to 6% of global annual revenues. And in light of Ukraine and COVID, it also includes provisions whereby in national emergencies, it could force platforms to limit certain content or threats. There's been concerns about this around whether it gives too much power to the European Commission to be the sole decider on content or what defines an emergency. So while there has been political agreement for the DSA, the actual legal text is still yet to be decided. So we'll know more in the coming weeks.
Macedonia with a reggae twist.
That was Eurovision on 95 BFM.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.